Blog Talk Radio.
December 30th, 2010. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Polk Runyon. And tonight, we're going to guide you step by step through the entire procedure of summoning a goetic spirit to visible appearance in Solomon's Triangle of Art. Now, we're not going to actually get something to appear on your computer screen, although we might do that next year, but we will give you all the necessary explanations and instruction necessary to perform such an operation. And of course, the catch is that you first have to train yourself in the skills and internalize the rituals that we're describing. So this is kind of like someone telling you exactly how to ski down the north slope of the Matterhorn. In other words, you can imagine how exciting it is, but you have at least a year's work ahead of you before you can actually do it. But then, who knows? You might have some interesting dreams tonight, so, as I said, tune in, turn on, and let's see what appears in a glass darkly. Now, those of you who have seen our video, The Magic of Solomon, which we've remastered from back in the old VHS days, and we got it remastered in digital remastery, and we've expanded it and extended it and cleaned it up and added some stuff to it and whatever. Those of you who have seen that, and especially those of you who have read the companion book, The Book of Solomon's Magic, which is in its going into its 15th printing, and it's, of course, available on Amazon. Those of you who have been with us on this, you know about how I got started in this strange avocation of mine back in 1969. But for those of you who don't know, I'm going to review that just briefly in line with tonight's show. Now, in 1969, I was living in Manhattan Beach and trying to write screenplays and treatments for Hollywood at the time, and one thing or another. But anyway, I had a condition, medical condition, which was misdiagnosed as an ulcer. And I'd lost a lot of weight, and I was really sick. But my doctor thought that this was an ulcer. So it wasn't an ulcer. Actually, it was an atrophied gallbladder, and it almost killed me. But I tried because I thought that ulcers were psychosomatic, and I thought this was a result of nervousness and some sort of psychological problem. So I thought I could cure it by perfecting self-hypnosis. And so what I did, along with doing occult research for a screenplay that I was trying to write, I went into an intensive self-hypnosis training program with the idea of getting this ulcer under control. Well, What the result of that was, along with my occult research that I was doing and self-hypnosis, was that that I got very, very deep into hypnosis because I kept trying to use it to get rid of the pain. And the pain of this was pretty intense, and so the hypnosis had to be more and more powerful, and I had to get deeper and deeper into it. So this is how I developed the self-hypnosis part of this process. Meanwhile, I was doing the occult research. I was getting sicker. In fact, yeah, no matter, I can truly say that I was on the way to dying because this gallbladder had turned to solid rock and it was the size of my fist. And I didn't realize that that was what it was. It was going on. I had lost so much weight that I was a skeleton and I was jaundiced. And still, I kept trying to hypnotize myself more and more. And I kept studying more and more occultism. And finally, in the course of this, before we finally found out what this really was, I discovered how to actually conjure spirits to visible appearance in Solomon's Triangle of Art. This is, you know, according to the old grimoires. And the way this happened was that I had been reading voraciously all this material. I ran across Omar Garrison's book, Tantra, the Yoga of Sex, there was a reference in there to the use of magic mirrors in the Far East, that you would stare into a magic mirror, a dark mirror, flanked by two candles, and stare at your reflection, and then your reflection would black out, and another face would come in, and this was supposed to be a previous incarnation. Well, it occurred to me, and meanwhile, I'd been trying to figure out how to get these spirits to appear in Solomon's Triangle from the occult material I was studying, and I suddenly realized, as sick as I was and as far into hypnosis as I was, wait a minute. If previous incarnations can appear, well, why not spirits? Because spirits, disembodied spirits. Now, I was taking this from a Jungian perspective. I studied Carl Jung, and I also knew something about Vudan, about voodoo, and I knew that the spirits were connected to our deep mind, to our subconscious mind, and that if that was the case, then perhaps we could see the vision of the spirit in the mirror as well as a previous incarnation. And this came to me as an inspiration. So what I did was I experimented, and sure enough, it worked. And especially because I'd been doing all this hypnosis, I knew how to talk to myself, and that developed this ability for the spirit to talk. Because when you practice self-hypnosis, and this is why self-hypnosis is a very, very important part of this process, is that you talk to your subconscious as a separate person. And your subconscious then can talk back to you as a separate person. You have to hypnotize yourself in order to be able to develop this ability. And so I could do this. And I could get the spirit to talk to me. And my voice would change. I remember the first spirit I did was Baal, or Baal, the first spirit of the Galatia. And he appeared as a kind of a gruff, he looked a little bit like Genghis Khan, you know. And he appeared in the mirror, and he spoke in a very rough voice, and I, of course, the voice was coming out of me, and the reflection was reflected off of me, but it was a completely different entity, and I was just, I realized I had figured out how to do it. I knew how to do it. And one of the things that makes this even more transpersonal is the fact that you put the spirit, I realize you put the spirit sigil on the mirror. And you put it on there, I put it on in grease pencil, and that sigil, like a voodoo vey-vey, it tends to break up the facial features and gives the facial features the unique quality of the spirit. So that's an important thing. And then you wear a lamen around your neck, which also has the sigil of the spirit. So that's how I discovered it, and that's how I found out that self-hypnosis, the whole hypnotic process, was part and parcel of this method. So I kind of, in a way, I sort of stumbled into this, but then I got sicker and sicker, of course, and I had to have surgery, and I finally realized what was wrong with me, and I had surgery, and we survived it, obviously. So I came out of it, and I came back to some form of normalcy because, frankly, I've already admitted that during the time I was experimenting with this and during the time I was really discovering this, I really wasn't in a normal state. I think it was almost a toxic psychosis because I really was. I was dying, and I was just really in an altered state the whole time. So when I came out and recovered my health, I got to thinking back on this, and I realized that, wait a minute, you know, as goofy as I was, maybe what I discovered will still work. Maybe it will. Maybe it recovered my health. So I tried it again, and sure enough, it did. And that's what got me started with forming the OTA and getting and starting a magical order, because I realized I had something that was absolutely remarkable. I had discovered, and I thought, of course, at the time, I thought that this was exactly the way the old sorcerers had actually done it. And as it turns out, some of them probably did do it this way. In fact, I think I can pretty well establish that. But all of them didn't. So, at the time, I thought, this is it. They all did it this way. And I was convinced of that. So I started the OTA based upon this particular method. Now, since then, of course, we've discovered a lot of other very interesting things, and we've gone on to do evocation and invocation and path workings and we developed a marvelous hermetic yoga system, and we've filled out the complete curriculum of the magical order since then. But that's how it got started. And one of the things that I want to do tonight is I want to go through one of these goetic operations and explain to you exactly what we do and how we do it. Now, this gives a lot of stuff here to get across, and so on. I'm looking at my watch here, and I'm trying to make sure that we manage to cover all of this in the time we have. So if I go a little fast, well, we're going to catch up on it in the material. Now, since 1969. By late 1970, 1971, we were in regular operation. We were doing operations, at least once a week, and training people, and we were continuing. And finally, by 1975, we developed our yoga system by 1975. And then the yoga system very quickly became part of the goetic system, operating off of that. So that, of course, enhanced the Goetic invocation system. Now, start with, we select a spirit. Now, the Goetia has 72 spirits. Now, let me point out to you that these spirits are not, they're sometimes referred to as the Book of Evil Spirits. Well, that's not really true. They could be called the rebellious spirits. That's a better way to put it, because they are kind of disorganized. Actually, they don't follow the proper hermetic astrological sequence and all. They're kind of mixed up. So they are the rebellious spirits. Some of them are obviously what you would call demons. They really are obviously what you call demons, like Asmodeus and Belial. These are definitely what you would call demonic spirits. Now, Astaroth, on the other hand, is considered to be a demon by Orthodox Jewish people and Orthodox Christians consider Astaroth to be a demon. Actually, Astaroth was the Canaanite goddess Astarte, goddess of love, and from whom the Greeks got Aphrodite. Now, she was, because they were so anti-sexual and they were so patriarchal, the old rabbis and them following them, the priests of the Roman Church, they transformed Astarte into Astaroth the demon. Now, when I got started, I did Baal and Astaroth, which are actually Baal and Astarte, the ancient Canaanite god and goddess. And I found that, you know, when I got them, they were very nice people. I thought they were wonderful, and yet. I did them using the Goetic ritual and brought them to visible appearance, and Astarte was beautiful, and Baal was kind of gruff and very manly, but he was basically a sympathetic and helpful god. So you could look at it this way. Now, one thing I want to point out right quick. Theoretically, remember, the Goetia, the spirits of the Goetia, are based upon the concept of a Christian Tartarus, a Dante-type Christian Tartarus, where you have room for virtuous pagans and you have room for spirits that really aren't evil. It's just kind of a gloomy place, but there doesn't have to be necessarily evil. If you put these spirits in the Jewish Klepoth, then they're going to be evil, if that's the way you want to conceive it. But that's not the way the Goetia was written. Goetia was written on the basis of a Christian Tartarus. So just remember, the Goetic spirits are not necessarily evil. Some of them are ancient gods and goddesses. Now, so what we're going to do, as Andrea put the Astarte sigil up there on the internet for tonight's show, so we'll concentrate on that. That's one of the ones I started out with, Baal and Astarte. And so that'll be Astaroth will be the target for tonight. Now, first thing we do, you select our spirit. I want to make sure the moon is waxing. It's a good idea to check the mansion of the moon. Make sure you got a fortunate lunar mansion. The moon should be waxing, and then if you want to go a little further, you can take our master mandala, and you can go around and find when the spirit is actually going around the 360 degrees of the zodiac. And you got 72 of these spirits. Find out the days when the spirit will be exalted, and that will be the best time to do it if it falls in a waxing lunar period. Well, you don't have to do that, but it helps. And one of the things with this master mandala, it's a big circular wheel kind of a thing, and it has a zodiacal sign, the planet ruling the decans. It has the 360 degrees, the number of spirits. And it has the Shemi Hamfarash angel that is exactly opposite the Goetic spirit. Now, this is very important. And when we first got started doing this, we had people say, the Shemi Hamfarash has nothing to do with the Goetia. Well, that turned out to be not true at all. Now, we know, because Joe Peterson published this very, very fine Lamegaton Liturgy of Solomon, and we find out that a number of Goetic magicians, including Tom Rudd, all use Shem Hamfarash angels, right piggybacking on with their Goetia spirits. So you get the Shem Hamfarash angel and the Goetic spirit. Now, you've got all these spirits, all 72 of them, plus their Shem Hamfarash angels on the backside of their sigils, on parchment paper in your brass vessel. And they're in that brass vessel, and that's down on your operating table down in the temple. Now, what we do is we get down into the common room of the temple, and we get around our magic lamp, which sits there in the center of our table, which has the zodiac on it. And we first go down to Yesod. We bring the power down in our hermetic yoga all the way down to Yesod, which is in the genital area. By the way, all Goetic spirits, according to our way of doing this thing, are in Yesod. That's your lunar chakra down at the bottom of the Tree of Life, right above Malkuth. That's the lunar chakra. That's right where they should be, right at the entrance of the astral plane. That's where they all fell down to. But remember that each sphere of the Tree of Life has all the other spheres of the Tree of Life in it. So each one of these spirits that fell still has the characteristics of the sphere it fell from. They're fallen angels in that respect. They're all in Yesod. So we come on down and do our yoga, bring it all the way down to Yesod, energize that chakra, and go on into the temple. Now we open the temple in due form, and I won't go through that. So we get the temple open in due form, and then we do a pentagram ritual. Regular, and we'll do an invoking pentagram. We do, and to open up, an invoking pentagram ritual. Now, what this does is, in our system, is this sets the four archangels around the temple as guardians, and this actually establishes our magic circle. This empowers our magic circle. So we got that set up, and then, once we have that set up, then we do a septagram ritual. And a septagram ritual is a seven-pointed star, the days of the week, the planets, and whatever. And we do that for Yesod. And then we also do it for the sphere within Yesod that we're working on. In this case, with Astaroth Astarte, we would be doing both. She would be in Netzach of Yesod. So we would do the septagram ritual, and we'd go through that, drawing the septagram on the astral and doing it to all four quarters, and we chant Mararita as we do this, and then Shaddai Elokai, you trace the moon, and then Hamasha Ozebeo for Netzach. So then I will say, let the mystic circumambulation commence. Seven Turns Deosil for the Sphere of Yitzhak of Yassad. So we'll have one person ringing the bell at the quarters. We'll have one person now, if we're really doing this really formal, we'll have one person swinging the censer. But usually we don't do that. Usually we have the censers already set up. So I'll beat the drum, and we'll go around the circle, Deosil, seven times. And we'll do the vowel chant. This is a very old Gnostic chant. These are the sacred vowels of the holy name. And we'll continue to do this until we get to seven. Then we'll step into the circle. Now, we'll have a pentagram laid inside the circle. And the pentagram is laid in a special way. It's laid in a special way toward the quadrants. And I'm going to describe exactly that because that's kind of initiatory. But it's a special kind of pentagram that's laid out with tape and it points to the quadrant. Now, in the case of Astarte, we're going to do her in the north. And so that'll be toward toward the north side of the temple. And that'll be toward Oriel, toward the Oriel side of the circle. So we have the triangle. As soon as we get into the circle, then it's going to be necessary for us to move the furniture into position. So we're in the circle. We've already circumambulated. So we're going to start moving the furniture in. We'll move the operating table in, the stool for the receiver to sit on, the stool for the operator to sit on behind the receiver. We'll move the triangle on its easel up right up to the quadrant, and the legs of the triangle will kind of actually extend into the circle a little bit, but the mirror itself in the triangle will be just outside the circle. Now this is a point which some people get upset about because they say, oh, well, the legs of the easel are sticking inside the circle, or, oh, we can't have that, oh my gosh. Well, actually, I don't think that's a problem because the archangels established the circle. The circle is there. The mirror is actually outside the circle. So to me, that's not a problem. However, if that is a problem to you, then you should seal the circle. And we'll get into that in a minute. But anyway, while we're moving this furniture in order to keep ourselves in the trance state, the operator now, is going to do the Bornless invocation. And that will be in order to keep us all in a trance state and keep us all focused while we're moving this furniture, getting it set up. And that goes, Thee I invoke, the Bornless One, Thee that didst create the earth and the heavens, Thee that didst create the darkness and the light, Thou art Osiris and Ophrys, Osiris the Beautiful, whom no one hath seen at any time. Thou hast distinguished between the just and the unjust. Thou didst make the female and the male. Thou didst produce the seed and the fruit. Thou didst form us to love one another and to hate one another. Thou didst produce the moist and the dry, and that which nourishes all created life. I invoke thee, the terrible and invisible God, who dwelleth in the void place of the Spirit. And then there's more and more of that, and then come forth and follow me and make all spirits subject unto me, so that every spirit of the firmament and of the aether and upon the earth and under the earth and every spell and scourge of God may be obedient unto me. Now, by this time we should have everybody set up. In other words, the receiver should be sitting facing the mirror on the triangle. The mirror already has the sigil on it. The receiver has two candles. It sticks in either hand. We've moved the operating table in. The operating table has the brass vessel. It has the ring case. It has the wand. It has everything necessary for the operator The server is sitting on a low stool, and the server wears a hood, so he or she does not get in the receiver's field of vision. And the thurible is sitting right in between the mirror and the receiver with the incense appropriate. And in this particular case, the incense will be sandalwood for Netzach. And the server will very, very unobtrusively serve with the knife the incense, which will float up between the receiver and the mirror. Now, the operator will sit down behind the receiver. We could also have a scribe, and this is very good, and it's totally a completely formal operation. You should have a scribe sitting on the other side, and the scribe has a notebook, and the scribe records everything that is said, both by the operator, especially by the spirit, and by the operator. Now, once we get this done, we start. The operator will put on the ring. He will open the brass vessel. He'll show the sigil of the spirit to the receiver, and then he will read from the back of the sigil. The back of the sigil, he'll read the Shemayam Farash spirit to be invoked. And in this particular case, In this particular case, the spirit to be invoked should be, a spirit to be for Astaroth, according to the Master Mandala. The spirit is, I want to make sure that we get this absolutely, the spelling and everything absolutely correct, is Mindiel. And this is number 36 in our system. And so we read the Latin invocation for Mindiel. Then, once we have done that, we start into the conjuration of the actual spirit, and this way I come down with down to the chakras, and when I start off, and I'm going to do this, I just try to do this, just the way I do it. We call the spirit of Astaroth. We summon thee, Spirit Astaroth. We beseech thy presence, Goddess Astarte. We call thee by the barbarous names, Eneo and Leocity, ministers of the seat of Charteris and chief princes of the throne of Apologia in the ninth region. We call thee by the holy and glorious name, Jehima Shamadayim. Elohim Gavoram Ashawalam Abada Pamasho Zabeo Kalohim Zabeo Shaddai El Kai Adonai Sendalfan Gamriel Onoel. Now I will be sitting behind the receiver, and I will be drawing these gongs. At the proper chakras, visualizing the chakras in his or her body while I'm doing this with the wand. And then I will continue to call the spirit. And as the receiver, stares into the mirror. And after I do this about twice, the first time, if it seems that I'm getting something, and it seems that I can tell, I'm not, claiming a lot of telepathy, but still I have a pretty good feeling for whether or not we got a presence. And I'll ask the receiver, I said, do you have a presence? And perhaps she'll say, she's here. And I will say, would you like it stronger? And then if she says, a yes, then I'll repeat the conjuration. And then I'll know at that point that I have, that I welcome the spirit. And now in the case of a Canaanite goddess form like Astarte, I'm going to apologize for, you know, if it's just a regular gracious spirit, I won't apologize. But if it's, let's say it's Astarte, I'm going to apologize for conjuring her, the goddess, with these strong incantations. And so I'll apologize, and I will say, I'll get this exact wording here, the apology here. And let's see, because we had the idea, and I think it's very, very true, very right, that we should have this absolute apology to the God form if you're going to summon them in this respect. And I said, we welcome the great goddess Astarte. We apologize for summoning you with such strong incantations, but we hasten to declare that we command only that aspect of you that dwells within ourselves, your higher presence and universal essence we hold in true reverence and serve in all humility. Now, so then I will ask the receiver if the goddess has an oracle for us, or would she comment upon our work? And then the receiver will either use her. In most cases, we do use a female receiver for Astarte. And she uses her voice and repeat. And use the goddess uses her voice. Sometimes the goddess will use her voice, and it will sound completely different than the person whose were. It depends upon the, I won't say the depth, but let's say it depends upon the aspect of this contact that we have. But I can ask. I can carry on a three-way conversation. I can ask the receiver, and I can get, she's feeling or what she's experiencing. I can ask the spirit, and so I can actually have a three-way conversation with the entity. So this does work, and it's quite effective. So after we've gotten what it is that we've asked the spirit to give us, an oracle or a blessing or whatever, and done our business with the spirit, we do the license to depart. In this case, it's for King of the Goddesses, as great goddess Astarte, we thank thee for attending our rites and for granting our requests. We hope that your inspiration will remain and grow ever stronger within us, even as your greater presence departs from our circle. Return now to your wondrous realm, but please be ever ready to appear again when called by the sacred rites of magic. Hail and farewell. Now, if this was an ordinary gracious spirit, we would be a little stronger than that. We'd say, may the peace of God be ever between we and thee, and give no harm to any living creature, whatever. Now, that's basically it. So then, after that, by the way, I want to mention something here, that the receiver wears around her neck or his neck a lamem, which has the sigil of the spirit also, and the sigil of the spirit's on the mirror. Now, if that lament, for any reason, is turned around backwards, and you always have to check on this, doesn't matter whether you can see it in the mirror or not, or you don't even realize it, that will ruin the entire operation if it's turned backwards, because there's a banishing pentagram on the backside of that lament. And if it gets turned around backwards accidentally, you can conjure it, if you're blue in the face, you're not going to get anything. And so be sure and check on that before you get started. Now, as soon as you do the license to depart, the operator will turn around and turn the Lemin over and show that pentagram, that reverse pentagram, and then snuff out the candles with his fingers, and then we get up and we reverse the operation. In other words, we do a closing septagram, and then we do a closing pentagram, and we close the temple in due form, and we go back out. Now, it's very important that when you, as soon as even if you have a scribe taking down everything, it's very, very important that you immediately go back up into the hermitage, back out of the temple, into the hermitage, sit down, and before you get to chatting and gossiping and doing whatever you're doing, you need to log this operation, and you need to log everybody's impressions on the operation, because even though the receiver is the main person to receive it, other people will also, and you primarily get the receiver's impressions, and then the technical details of the operation. You've got to do this, because these operations, as intense and powerful as they are, they have a dreamlike quality. And if you don't immediately recall them and write them down and log them, you are going to lose them. And so this has to be done immediately and has to be done carefully in your lodge log. So we always do that. We have lodge logs that go back years and years and years and years. I got a stack of them that's over a foot high of these log records of these operations. Some of them are really remarkable. Some of them are. I won't say any of them are particularly uninteresting. They're all interesting, but some of them are just really remarkable. And some of them contain what I would consider to be very, very worthwhile information. Now, this gives you an idea of, I believe, exactly how these operations are done. And I want to point out that we've been doing this now. We've been doing this ever since 1969, 1970, all the way through, almost on a, say at least maybe one of these a month at least, when the moon is full, for the past almost 40 years. And so I think we really know how to do this. Now, there are other people who do druidic operations in other ways. I think Paul Husson developed the idea of when you get the point where the spirit's supposed to appear, and he didn't use a mirror or anything like that. He would turn out the lights and have the chamber, the temple, completely and totally dark, so that the spirit would hopefully appear in the darkness, and if not, at least you would have a presence of the spirit in the darkness. That's one way of doing it. Steve Sabdo, my friend in Florida, he did it on the Galatia using a Clifford model, and he did it medieval freeform, where he didn't have a conjuration device. He had a triangle, laid the triangle flat, and they got in a warehouse in Fort Lauderdale in the middle of summer, 120 degrees in the shade, if you could find any. And they're inside this dark warehouse, and they drove themselves into a hysterical frenzy for two or three days straight conjuring. And they finally got spirits to appear in visible appearance, but all of their Galatian spirits looked like horrible gargoyles. And Steve said they didn't get anything but just a lot of black magic stuff, nothing that did them any good. And he said that the spirits were all lived in a sort of an environment that was like a dark planet with no vegetation and caves and and they were all these yellow-eyed gargoyles. That's what they were. Well, that's because they decided that all of these great spirits lived in the cliff hive, and that's the reason why they got that's why they got them that way. With us, we find our great spirits are a very very interesting and a very colorful bunch of very, very interesting characters. Now, one thing I will say about Goetic spirits, and one thing you have to watch out for, and you really have to be careful, is that they are not. Once you know how to do it, they are not hard to contact. They are very gregarious. They really do want to contact you. They really do want to be in touch with you. But they can become a problem in that respect. You can't get rid of them. This becomes the problem. They want you to do things for them. They all seem to want you to do something for them. And you have to be careful with that. You can do little things for them, but you do have to be careful. And the most important thing is, don't ever, ever call them without going through the regular ceremonial procedure. Because if you start inviting them to contact you anytime they want to, you may very well end up with a problem. And that's the one thing that you really, really have to be careful about. By the way, our guest call-in number is 347-857-1830. So anyone who wants to call in here, we got about 15. Yeah, so could you give us a call right quick if you'd like to. Now, to continue talking about this particular situation, the Goetic spirits, these Goetic spirits all, if you notice, if you read the Goetia, you notice that almost all of them teach things. They're all, this is something that that Steve, when he did his down in Fort Lauderdale, they didn't teach him anything except black magic. And he said he got 500 pages of stuff that he couldn't publish. It was so bad. But the Goetic spirits all teach. They teach rhetoric. They teach astronomy. The history of the fallen angels. They teach. They teach art. They teach music. They are. In fact, I actually think that because of the way that they are so instructive, I actually have a suspicion that the Goetia was developed originally. This is my suspicion, that it was developed in some Spanish university in the Middle Ages, and that it was really something that a bunch of university students used it to get through their courses. Now, I know that may sound a little strange, but then in the Middle Ages, if you really wanted an education, you went to Spain. And in University of Cordoba and these various areas, Moorish Spain especially, they had universities that were Christians, Jews, and Sufis, and this is especially important, Sabaeans were teaching. And they were teaching magic, they taught astrology, they taught alchemy. All of these sciences were taught in these Spanish universities. This is you get an idea when you read Picatrix. You get, especially the Latin version, you get an idea of just what these curriculums were like. So my suspicion is that the Goetia really was developed by by some magically inclined university students. Man, of course, however, when I was a university student, I used Asmodeus to try to get through statistics because Asmodeus teaches mathematics. And so I thought I would get Asmodeus to get me through statistics. Well, so along comes the midterm, and boy, I aced the midterm. I just really, you know, with Asmodeus working for me, I just aced the midterm. However, Asmodeus was also the angel of confusion. So when I went in for the final, I drew a blank and I flunked the final. So I got mad at Asmodeus, and I haven't done Asmodeus since. But I did finally manage to get through statistics, so maybe he did help some after about that. So you have to watch out because, you know, they are capricious and they are not they're rebellious and they're capricious, and you have to handle them carefully. But they really do have a lot to teach you. In one case, I remember on the Shemon for Archangels too are very good, and the Shemon for Archangels, especially if you read Barden, and he has the Shemon for Archangels in Hod. He puts them in Mercury. Read what these Shemon for Archangels could do for you too. They're very close to the Goetia spirits. They're like the somewhat better version of the Goetic spirits, and so you can do those too. We do those in a crystal ball, of course. But I asked Bahuya one time, one of these Shemon for Archangels behind Baal, and I said, what's the difference between you, really the real difference between you and the Goetic spirits? And Bahuya told me, he said, they are the art and the knowledge. We are the wisdom and the power. And that isn't something I would have come up with myself, but I remembered that. And so if you got the art and the knowledge on the one hand, on the one side, that's the Goetia, and then the Shemihan Farash on the other hand, they are the wisdom and the power, you really have quite a well-balanced system. So with that in mind, that gives you a fairly, fairly good handle on how we actually do this aspect of Solomon's magic. Of course, there are other aspects of Solomon's magic. There are talismans. There's the creation of talismans and the invocation of the angels, and the entire scope of magic in relation to the Kabbalah is encompassed by this system. And I think that this also helps you along the line of eventually finding your holy guardian angel, and that's another subject we'll discuss perhaps next week. I think that would be a good thing. Let's discuss next week. Let's discuss the holy guardian angel process, Abramelin, how we do it in the OTA with our 3-day retreat, and we'll get into that aspect of magic. And so, looks like we are just about, how much time do we have left here? We have 5 minutes left. And in that time, on the next week, we'll discuss Abramelin. And if those of you who recall Abramelin, you realize that there is a new version, I think most of you know this, there's a new German version of Abramelin available. Previous to this time, there was the Mathers Mather's English version of the French version. Now, in the Admiral Mellon operation, the idea is it's kind of like a vision quest. You go into a retreat and you purify yourself. You go into a retreat and you continue to do these operations, these transcendental operations, until you finally attain what is referred to as the knowledge and conversation of your holy guardian angel. And at this point, according to the Admiral Mellon tradition, you then can command and control a host of lesser spirits. Now, those lesser spirits, especially from the German version, are the ones that Franz Barden extrapolated for his Spirits of the Earth Sphere in his second volume, Magical Invocation. And so it's just about wraps up where we're at tonight. And next week we will get into the entire process of Admiral Mellon and discuss the Admiral Mellon system, and especially our particular version of it and how we do it. And so next week let's have some call-ins. And meanwhile, we have some comments on tonight, so call us up tomorrow, next week when we come back on. Meanwhile, have a good one, and Happy New Year, and good magic.